This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The Aronoff Center and Music Hall have basically been dark since this pandemic began and the shows stopped. We're still not yet at a point where we can have such large crowds, which is tough in a city like ours that loves its ambitious art scene. So today we're going to be joined by a variety of local arts leaders. And we start with Cincinnati Arts Association President Steve Lofton. He's on the phone with us. Steve, thank you so much for being with us.
Sure, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure. Cincinnati is blessed with arenas and theaters that punch above its weight, I like to say. And the Aronoff Center, goodness knows, Music Hall are certainly among them. But what a challenging time to know that there's not a whole lot going on inside there. So just give us an overview of what's happening in these halls that the Cincinnati Arts Association manages.
Well, we're struggling with the times, of course. Everybody knows that this is unprecedented impact on activity in our community, and there's certainly a focus of that impact on the live performance and entertainment industry. All of the opportunities for the performers to come together and bring their craft to our halls are just stopped in the cold, dead in their feet right now. And we are spending this time working on developing plans to bring the activity back when we are allowed to do so. And most of what we are doing these days are looking into safety precautions when we have the ability to come back into the buildings and have our curtains rise again and put people back to work and bring the arts back to the city.
Steve, we've seen some plans released for smaller operations like restaurants and bars that attract a good number of people, but certainly not what you would see at the Procter & Gamble Theater inside the Aronoff Center, where you'd see a Broadway tour. I'm wondering what that planning process looks like for you all, both in terms of execution, but also for timing, since things are still so fluid right now.
I think you nailed it right there, Michael, that things are so fluid, and that's the most difficult part of the process, is not knowing exactly when or even generally when something's going to change. So as a result, all of the organizations that call the halls their homes are working through different scenarios and planning for what-if opportunities. And you mentioned some of the smaller theaters. One of the biggest concerns is the inability to socially distance efficiently. While there may be some productions that can be specially designed to work well with social distancing in the hall, the touring productions and one-night concerts and things of that nature don't really work from a financial standpoint unless there is strong enough attendance capacity to support that. So on the one hand, it sparks the creativity of the various resident companies and producers to come up with opportunities with us to bring in a show that would be socially distanced properly throughout the building. But those are few and far between when it comes to the regular touring industry. So there's just a lot of indecision and challenges going on with what opportunities are out there. And we are continuing to follow the guidance, of course, of the local and state health officials. And we're in contact with them, but we don't know, just like everybody else, when this is going to come to an end.
So, Steve, it sounds like what you're saying is it might be easier, so to speak, to execute a social distancing audience in the Procter & Gamble Theater, where the Broadway series typically performs, but maybe more challenging in your mid-sized theater, the Jarson Kaplan, and goodness knows, in the Black Box Theater, the Fifth Third Bank Theater.
Yes, I think that if you have a production that can anticipate the type of capacity, we could make accommodation in our larger halls for that. And I know there are some creative plans that are going on in that way. But in order for us to embrace the larger productions of all of these groups, including Broadway, we really need the ability to have the capacity to just to make financial sense out of it. And so we're struggling with the fact that we need lead time to make all of these things work, and it's going to be difficult to determine when the halls are available again in advance, so to allow the time for the productions to gear up and be produced and rehearsed and prepared technically to go out on the road. So we have an interesting scenario with the venues needing to be available and approved to come online for touring shows. And of course, you need the touring shows to be able to come into the venues themselves. So it's a bit of a everybody pulling together, dependent on one another situation in this entire industry, the music industry and the theater and dance industries as well.
I'm fortunate to have had the opportunity to spend many years as a performer in Cincinnati and with a resident company that operated out of the Fifth Third Bank Theater, the Black Box. So I know what it's like to perform in front of, how would you say, a socially distanced audience before it was cool. And I also know that it's very difficult to turn a profit if that's the case. And I think a lot of people may not be aware that the Aronoff Center is more than the Broadway series and the tours that come into town. What are you hearing from some of these resident companies and the situation in which they're finding themselves?
Well, as I said, everyone is in the same boat together, and they're working out different schedule scenarios. For example, the ballet and the orchestra and all of the other resident organizations that are at Music Hall are working on opportunities to, from whether or not, like they have done recently, whether or not there's an opportunity to do live streaming from the stage, which was done a couple of times already, most recently on the 4th of July. And it was really wonderful and exciting. It's the only thing it was missing is an audience. So the questions are whether or not you could do such a production as that and have audience spaced out within the venue itself and providing the necessary social distancing. So the creative minds and all of our companies, the world-class companies here in Cincinnati, are working on these options. But nothing would please everybody more than hearing the word that we would be able to bring audiences back into our facilities, because that's what we're missing now is a live audience.
And we're talking with Steve Lofton. He's president of the Cincinnati Arts Association. And Steve, it does sound like Broadway, which is dark as well, is going to stay that way for the foreseeable future. What does that do for your planning, knowing that that could impact the touring schedule as well?
Well, it's really difficult, because if we actually knew when a show was going to occur or not going to occur, we could lock it in. But instead, we have to make provisions for the shows being rescheduled. We are currently scheduled to kick off in November at the Aronoff Center with the Broadway series. And there's a very, very busy season cascading throughout the rest of the year. So most theaters around the country are experiencing the same problems and challenges, where they have opportunities to bring shows in, but the shows needs to be show actually needs to be confirmed that they have a venue waiting for them, because it takes a great number of cities to establish a tour that works, for particularly for these large scale Broadway performances.
A lot of industries impacted severely by this pandemic, of course, that goes without saying, but a lot of industries are also able to pivot a little bit. And while it may not be ideal, there's still some income to be generated. Curbside pickup for food, for example. You don't really have that option at the Cincinnati Arts Association. So as to the hit that your bottom line must be taken, what have you had to do? I understand that you've had to lay off some personnel.
Yes, unfortunately, that's very true. We recently laid off about 42 of full-time employees of the Cincinnati Arts Association, and that was in addition to over 65 part-time people that were laid off due to activity falling off in March. We've also canceled about 197 events and rescheduled 123. So there is a tremendous impact, and certainly is taking a financial toll on our operation, which is just tantamount to why we are so focused on getting activity back up and running. But we know we need to do it in a safe and responsible fashion, and we're supporting our governor's efforts in that area. Everything that they have done before has been reasonable and with the safety of the public in mind, and we support that, of course. We are pleased that we've recently reopened the Weston Art Gallery. It opened last Thursday, and it's open now for operation between Tuesday and Saturdays from 11 to 4. So we hope people come by there and Aronoff Center and visit the Weston Art Gallery.
What kind of restrictions do you have in place to protect people there?
We are requiring that patrons wear masks, as do our staff. We will ask them to sign in so that we have the opportunity to provide contact tracing should something occur. And, of course, we have hand sanitizer everywhere and cleaning the facility on an overly aggressive basis.
And again, we're talking with Steve Lofton, president of the Cincinnati Arts Association, which operates the Aronoff Center, as well as Music Hall. Steve, talk a little bit about the traditional impact that the arts that are hosted at those two venues has on the greater economy in this community.
Well, I mean, everyone knows that the resident arts organizations at Music Hall and the Aronoff are just incredible resources for our community. And the arts have millions and millions of dollars of impact every year in the Cincinnati area. And I think one of the things that we have to need to really focus on is, as we were talking about the layoffs, is the artists themselves. When they get laid off, there's no work. There's nowhere else to go. And so it's a really difficult financial time for the stage employees and the musicians and artists and actors that are affected. The local scene has so much to offer in the way of arts for Music Hall and the Aronoff Center activity. And we just are finding ourselves in a real difficult time right now.
What do you think things look like on the other side of this? I guess what I'm asking is, is the arts community resilient enough to bounce back, not just economically, but also creatively?
There's no doubt they're resilient enough to come back, and we are all 100% on board and optimistic that things will return. And our feedback from our audiences are they're very anxious to come back. And, of course, they want to make sure that it's safe to do so. But you know, we know we're coming out on the other side, and I think that when testing it reaches its necessary goals and inoculation is available for the general public, that we will find ourselves coming back. And I think that's going to be sometime during the upcoming year.
Do you have any concerns about lingering fears among the public, even after we get the green light someday soon, hopefully, to get back together again? Is there any concern that that's going to take some time for a mass audience to get back together?
Yeah, that's a great point, Michael. I think that for sure we're going to not see the faucet turned on full at the beginning. We will see that people will be coming back at their pace that they feel comfortable with. But once again, we're getting feedback. People are very interested in returning. We know that folks, particularly those who are vulnerable to the disease more so, might take some time to get comfortable to come back. And the proof is going to be in the statistics and the science. And everyone is following that very closely. But I think we will have a strong return. We'll just have to welcome people back and provide the most safe environment we possibly can, which we're dedicated to doing.
Steve Lofton is president of the Cincinnati Arts Association, which operates the Aronoff Center for the Arts, as well as Music Hall. Steve, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. We'll look forward to seeing a show there soon, I hope.
Pat, we'll look forward to seeing you again soon.
Ensemble Theater, Cincy Shakes, Commonwealth Artists Student Theater, and Cincinnati Black Theater Artists Collective, which was founded during this pandemic, will also join us as this show goes on. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue our conversation now about the impact of COVID on our local theater scene. So joining us on the phone are Ensemble Theater of Cincinnati, producing artistic director D. Lynn Myers. Lynn, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having us here.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. And an organizer of Cincinnati Black Theater Artists Collective, Candace Handy. Candace, thank you for being with us also.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on.
Our pleasure to have you on. Lynn, let's start with you. You are well established in town. It's almost 40 years, I guess, and the theater has certainly faced some difficult situations before. I think all theaters are familiar with difficult situations, but gosh, can you put into perspective what this situation is like?
It's really hard to put in perspective when you think about all of the people out of work, all of the wonderful artists that aren't working anywhere, all across our country, all across our city. And in the 35-year history of the theater, which, mind you, I wasn't here to start it, but, you know, Ensemble has taken some very strong stances and been fairly tenacious on things to survive, and that's what we're trying to do now. We're in a very ever-changing world with regard to the power of the arts and the power that arts can have in our country. And trying to sustain this organization, it's hard. We're a $3 million budget, and we've lost a third of that already. So I don't know. I really don't know how and when we can get back on our stages, but it doesn't mean that we're going to shy away from doing it. It's just this virus is proving to be a very strong opponent.
So, Lynn, just some quick math, a third of a $3 million budget is $1 million that you've lost already.
Mm-hmm. We've lost that.
I know that there are some very generous people in our community. You do see a lot of the same names who are big donors to organizations like yours and ours, for that matter, Cincinnati Public Radio. Mm-hmm. What do you think that challenge is going to be like as everyone starts coming back looking to get that money back going again?
Startup funding is going to be hard. I will tell you that Ensemble, we do have some wonderful major benefactors. However, the reason that, you know, I'm here in the office today and talking to you is because we have the greatest audience. So many of our subscribers and our single ticket buyers that weren't able to see the last shows of last season donated back or took credit so that we could owe them a show as opposed to asking for refunds. Oh. Over 75% did that. So I think that what you'll find in Cincinnati theater, at least I hope what you'll continue to find, is that there is more of a grassroots community response and engagement so that a lot of people are sharing the burden of trying to help us. And we're trying to help ourselves first and foremost. We have not curtailed our educational programming, and we haven't, you know, our entire staff isn't gone. A big chunk is, and anybody left is working at a much smaller salary amount from a small salary amount to start with. So I'm not saying it's easy, but this is a fight worth fighting, and I believe that we can hopefully make a difference, not just in coming back, but coming back smarter and stronger.
That's D. Lynn Myers, Producing Artistic Director of Ensemble Theater of Cincinnati. We're also joined by Candace Handy, an organizer of Cincinnati Black Theater Artists Collective, also an actor here in town. Candace, this is a strange time to launch an arts organization or initiative. So put this into perspective for us. What's the goal here?
Well, while it is a very strange time, it's an awful time. It also provides a unique opportunity. Theater being virtual can reach a lot more people, obviously. And the goal of the Cincinnati Black Theater Artists Collective is to sort of educate the community on shows that they wouldn't necessarily be seeing when theater was being produced, specifically to the shows that tell the stories of the Black experience.
So when have you put on any shows yet under this umbrella in some capacity?
Sure. Well, project called Monologues for Us by Us. We have 5 weeks up. We are using Facebook as the platform right now. And I have just created a website where all of the videos will also be available, and YouTube. And the project is basically every Friday, two actors perform a monologue from, one actor will perform a monologue from one of August Wilson's plays, and the other actor will perform a piece from either a local Black playwright or a Black playwright that, just a different contemporary Black playwright. So we have 5 more weeks of that. And then hopefully after that, you know, we'll come up with something else. It's just all about putting out content online to keep all of our artistic juices flowing, because I really, in the beginning, I said, man, you know, what can we do right now? Because we all lost our jobs. So it was like, well, we got a free space called the internet. So.
Well, I want to ask you, Candace, because not only are we experiencing this pandemic, we're also going through some very serious questions as a nation and as a community about who we are and who's underrepresented. And we're talking a lot about racism in ways that perhaps nationally we haven't in the past, as more and more people are doing some introspection. So talk about the significance, if you could, about trying to get Black stories into this medium.
Right. I don't think it is a coincidence that the pandemic is happening at the same time as the Black Lives Matter movement being amplified, because it's hard, and theaters are losing money, but because the theater is having to take a break, you know, we could really kind of look back and see how we can come back better. And a lot of artists who weren't feeling as empowered then are feeling a bit more empowered to talk about these things now. The significance of telling Black stories is, you know, 1996, you know, August Wilson's speech, The Ground on Which I Stand, he talks about how, you know, the white institution of theater has kind of taken on, you know, the responsibility of telling the Black story. And really, we are trying to fit into a mold that is not necessarily, you know, the Black experience has, Black culture has its own values. As we all are Americans, we have a lot of the same, we have a lot of similarities, obviously, but there are different values. You know, Wilson talks about how, you know, you can go to a dinner party at a white person's house and you can go to a dinner party at a Black person's house. We have dinner parties, but we might have different food at that party. So it's, you know, it's things like that where it's like it's important to tell that specific experience, because we've created our own culture after being stripped of our original culture. Black people have persevered and created our own American culture, and it is just as American as white culture. So when you start, you know, clumping everything together, anything that is not white theater is, it seems like, you know, everything else is like the other, you know, or, you know, people of color, which now we've got this great, you know, Black and Indigenous and POC, POC. I think that's great, because every culture is more specific than that. And the more specific we get about our storytelling, the more our audiences will diversify, and, you know, the more going to be when we produce it ourselves.
That's Candace Handy, organizer of Cincinnati Black Theater Artists Collective, also an actor here in Cincinnati. We're also joined on the phone by D. Lynn Myers, producing artistic director at Ensemble Theater of Cincinnati. And Lynn, I may be a little biased because of my own personal involvement with the local theater community, but as you listen to Candace's story and see somebody starting a theater opportunity in this very strange time to do so, I think it speaks to the resilience of creative types. Do you think that people in the theater world are perhaps more equipped to handle this type of situation because so much of that life is spent trying to get people's approval and more often than not, not getting it?
Well, I think, I mean, jumping back to what Candace said, is I don't think it's an accident that the Black Lives Matter movement has taken root now in the midst of the pandemic. I don't think that's a coincidence in the least. What I will say is that, yeah, it's a terrible time for arts, but we've been here before, maybe not in the midst of a pandemic. But what I can tell you is that in 01, when ETC was here, and one of the few organizations in Over the Rhine that stood up then for the murders of 13 innocent black men, and now standing in very much in line with the Black Lives Matter movement, it gives us time, in a way, to reflect and to look at what we can do better, what we have done well, what we need to do, how we can be more inclusive. And that's a national, international situation. It's not just here in Cincinnati. In 01, I thought things would change dramatically. They did for a short while in a small way in our city. We are now looking at an international movement calling for equality and justice. That has power behind it. That has a lot more power than us just holding our ground on Vine Street, which was no small feat. But, you know, now what we're looking at is an international awakening and awareness. And August Wilson was one of the first to be recognized in a long, long line now of black writers and black artists that aren't getting as much time on their stage. However, at ETC, when we reopen our theater, we're not going to reopen with anything fluffy. We're not a fluffy theater. We're reopening with Pipeline, which was on our stage when we closed back in March because of the pandemic, when we were forced to close. We had one full performance, and then that was that. But, you know, rather than compromise and not address the movement or acknowledge the need for stories to be on our stage, we're bringing that show back so it can have a full run, and developing other shows that we hope will make a difference in not only this community, but be seen as a little bit more of a leader, which I think having a social conscience ensemble has always tried to do. Maybe not as well as we should have, or as strong as it should have been, but the attempt, the interest, the belief, and the standing with this movement is completely and absolutely there, from my board down to my mostly, sadly, furloughed staff. So if you're going to tackle a problem, like how do you bring live theater back to the stage when there's no money, when people are afraid to come, when a house like mine with 182 seats could seat 35 if I were to open anytime soon, if you're going to tackle that problem, then what you might as well do is tackle it well and with a conscience and step up and make sure that you're worthy to come back. Make sure that you're worthy to represent certainly our city and our nation that our stories on our stage are supposed to do.
Lynn, how is Ensemble Theater preparing for that comeback? You noted that, I guess, if the 35 reference to 35 audience members is a reference to, I guess, the social distancing requirements. How are you preparing in this time of uncertainty, not even knowing exactly when you would need to be prepared officially?
Right. Well, we are working on making sure that we can have online content in September, October, November. We're hoping to have Pipeline back up as soon as it's safe, and that's what we will open our theater back up with. And that is your guess as well as mine. I'd love to say, you know, January. I'd love to say September. When we went down, I thought we'd be back in May. I was terribly optimistic and just awfully wrong. But, you know, it's about conserving any resources we can. It's about continuing to work with the education programming that doesn't bring a lot of income in, but does make a difference, especially now that so many of our children are isolated. And Candace taught with us last year, which was great. And I hope that we can keep our teaching artists employed somewhat. It's so preparing. Yeah, every day we're trying to figure out. We've gone through the entire alphabet of scenarios, A through Z, and you know we're now on double B. It'll be a struggle. I wish I had a magic answer. There'll be a release coming out from Playhouse and Shakespeare and Us a little later on this week about what their plans are, but I've kind of just told you mine. And we are going to have to take it a step at a time. When I can have an audience of more than 35, great. If I can't, then I have to run our shows longer. And it doesn't mean that I will have titles to announce really far in advance, but I'm so grateful that 80% of our subscribers do so without knowing titles at ETC anyway. So what we're having to do is just bank on the trust of the people that we've served, at least for the 25 years that I've been here.
And that's Dee Lynn Myers, producing artistic director at Ensemble Theater of Cincinnati. We're also joined by Candace Handy, organizer of Cincinnati Black Theater Artists Collective. Candace, what do you see happening for this national organization that you've got when things get a little bit better? Have we lost Candace? Okay, I apologize for that. We've lost Candace.
Oh, no.
That's okay. We'll check back in because I'm very fascinated by what she's got going on. And she did say that these programs are on Facebook. So just search for Cincinnati Black Theater Artist Collective on Facebook. We'll have a link at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab and see what that organization is up to. And before we let you run, Lynn, if you don't mind, I know that you also work in the film industry locally, which has seen a huge amount of activity in recent years. It's really quite unbelievable to think of the Hollywood connections that have been made here in the Queen City, and you're involved in a lot of casting. And what are you seeing on that side of things here?
Well, I see an enormous future for Cincinnati in the film industry. We can do extraordinary work, which I think was proven from Carol to Miles Ahead to Dark Waters. I mean, these major films have been able to shoot here for a fraction of the cost that they would shoot elsewhere because Cincinnati is a very affordable city. For me, it's all about jobs, which is one of the reasons I'm so glad that Candace is doing the program that she's doing. People need to work. Artists need to work. And sometimes we work without pay, but we still need to work. And the film industry is no exception. There is a fight to get back on into a shooting schedule. There were three or four films that should have been through here now, but with the pandemic, couldn't do that. I think Cincinnati, you're going to see, is just becoming more and more and more a center for this creative work. And hopefully by doing that, you know, Ensemble was founded on the principle that we will hire first and foremost local professional actors to give people a reason to work and live and stay in Cincinnati. Now, the film industry in Cincinnati is doing the same thing. The more work we can get here, the more jobs we can get here. And film ripples out into dry cleaners and caterers and, you know, all of these other jobs that you might not even think of, you know, lumber providers, electricians, all these things that a film brings together for a short time while they're filming. The idea would be to keep having films come in so people can make a true living working in film in Cincinnati.
I think we just reconnected with Candace also from Cincinnati Black Theater Artist Collective. We've done that just in time to say goodbye. But Candace, I know that you said moments ago that you recently created a website. Can you tell us what that is?
Yes, it's a Cincy Black Tack. .com.
Okay, is it Cincy with an I or a Y?
Cincy with a Y, Black, BLACKTAC.
There you go. We'll have a link.
Now,
go on, yes.
Great. Yeah, I'll send you some stuff.
Cool,
but
yeah.
I haven't.
Well,
yeah,
we'll put a link up at WVXU.org, and I know that you said that you've got some of these performances on Facebook for people to check out. I'm sorry we had a technical glitch there and lost you momentarily, but we've been talking with Candace Handy, organizer of Cincinnati Black Theater Artist Collective, and also with Dee Lynn Myers, producing artistic director at Ensemble Theater of Cincinnati. Can't wait to see shows put on by both of you very soon. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue our conversation now about local theater in the COVID pandemic. And joining us now on the phone are Cincinnati Shakespeare Company producing artistic director Brian Isaac Phillips. Brian, thank you for being with us.
No, thanks for having me, Michael.
And we also have with us Commonwealth Artists Student Theater, or CAST, co-founder and artistic director Jason Burgess. Jason, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Brian, I want to start with you because at the beginning of this pandemic, I was reading a whole lot about how apparently during the bubonic plague, that's when William Shakespeare was alleged to have written a lot of the works that you're very well familiar with. And I'm wondering if you're seeing a similar burst of creativity within your organization during this very troubling time.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure that we have been able to uncover the next King Lear yet, we're working on it. I think that it is amazing to see how so many different artists are finding ways to innovate so that they can continue to express themselves. And within the short period of time that we have had to be dark so far, it's been 4 months. Time means nothing anymore. But we have been able to see a lot of interesting digital programs, new ideas with that come forward. We commissioned a project with a local actor, Christian Wiltshire, called Shakespeare Now, which looks at contemporary events through this. through Shakespeare's lens, and then also a lot of our commission projects that we've been working on slowly have started to accelerate. So I think you will see a lot of new work come out of this period. So we're not just sitting here in a dark building. We are trying to find a way to continue to create during this moment.
And that's something that we wanted to talk with both of you about specifically, because both of your organizations are still performing. Brian, Shakespeare in the Park has been a longtime tradition for Cincinnati summers. What's happening with that this year?
So we are continuing to do it. We are in rehearsal right now for our three Shakespeare in the Park shows, Midsummer Night's Dream, the Scottish play, Macbeth, and Romeo and Juliet. And they will continue to go out to parks, and we're going to try to find some new partners as well, working with Cincinnati Museum Center about maybe doing some performances in their parking lot, doing some performances in people's backyards, anywhere that we can have a socially distanced audience experience. We're going to be able to show up and still do our show. So it'll be less performances than we've done in the past, because not all parks are able to necessarily meet those safety guidelines, but those that are able to, we're going to be able to perform for them. Plus, we're also going to be recording those performances so that we can send them out to the community and to schools in the fall.
And that's Brian Isaac Phillips, Producing Artistic Director at Cincinnati Shakespeare Company. We're also joined on the line by Jason Burgess. He is the co-founder and artistic director at CAST, the Commonwealth Artists Student Theater. And Jason, your organization is also performing. I guess, what, we're just days away from the opening of the musical Newsies?
Yes.
Okay, so
we open on Friday.
How and where are you doing this?
So we are doing it in the Coney Island parking lot, the Moonlight Gardens parking lot that's closest to 275. And we have taken an empty parking lot, and we have constructed five stages so that we can socially distance our actors and keep them all spread out. And we're doing it drive-in movie theater style, except live musical theater. People can show up in their cars and dial in on their FM radio and listen to all of the music and the songs and the dialogue. Or if they so choose, they could bring some folding chairs, lawn chairs, and kind of sit out beside their car in their own nest little area and watch the show.
So your company has students, high school students, performing. What was the original plan? Did you have an original venue for your two-show season this summer?
Oh, yes. When this completely started in March, we were in the middle of casting and holding designer and crew interviews for our productions. And we finished those, you know, via Zoom, like everyone else was doing, and kind of sat on our hands. And you know, as Lynn had said earlier in the program, you know, we were hoping, like, by May, we would be up and running. And we do all of our rehearsing at Highlands High School in Fort Thomas, Kentucky. We do the musical there. We do our play over at the Carnegie. And towards the end of April, I got a phone call from Highlands High School basically saying no one's going to be allowed in the building until July 1st. And so at that point, we were like, okay, we either shelf everything and take a year off, or we try and create something new. And our minds started churning, and we thought, well, if everything's closed, there's got to be a lot of empty parking lots. And so we just started making some calls and seeing what we could make happen.
Okay, well, this is a question that I want to ask both of you, because you're both rehearsing currently. And so let me go back over to Brian quickly at the Shakespeare Company. What type of workplace procedures do you have in mind? I mean, theatrical acting can be quite intimate. You're very close to each other. And I mean, we're all still working here. A few of us are still working here inside the building at Cincinnati Public Radio. We have to keep our distance. We have to wear masks when we're out in the general public areas. I don't think that would be possible in rehearsal.
Yeah, so we have some very specific rules because, of course, we've got the group rehearsing, we've got some admin staff back, and we've got some production staff back as well. So there are different areas of the building that basically are no-go zones, so that the you know, the touring company is rehearsing in our Bridgeland Performance Studio, and that is in the front of the building that looks out over Washington Park. But that company, that group, does not move back into the admin offices, and the admin office group does not necessarily move into the rehearsal space or the performance space. So there's some separation of staff. We do health checks every day when people come in. So you have to take a temperature check, and you have to also sign off on a statement about how you're feeling. And we send you home if your temperature is above 100 degrees or at 100 degrees. But I think one of the things that's very unique about the touring company that's doing our Shakespeare in the Park program is that they do all live together in company housing. So they are their own bubble. So they came into town and quarantined together before rehearsals started. They are basically their own little family. So there's a little bit of separation because of that as well. And we make sure in the rehearsal room that everybody's wearing masks and that there is separation between the performers and the director and stage manager as well.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting because, I mean, we were told that, you know, you can do things with your household. And I guess that makes sense. The part of your company is a household.
Yeah, their own household, exactly.
Well, Jason, you're dealing with teenagers, and I'm wondering if their parents had any concerns about allowing them to get into groups like this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So the first thing that we did when we were all still, like, before anything was open, we had a huge Zoom parent-student meeting, and we kind of laid out the processes of how everything is that we were doing. And just like Brian was saying that, you know, we do temperature checks, we ask for complete open communication. You know, some of these high school students have jobs. And so if work at a place and they're like, yeah, someone at the job, tested positive, then we ask that student, you got to stay home for 48 hours, then get a test to wait for that test to come back. And then they can come back if it comes negative. So we, throughout this entire process, the parents have been in the know every single step. And we've been fortunate as well that we have, contacts and friends at the Health Collaborative, and we've talked constantly through with the, the health boards at the city, county, and state level to make sure that all the mandates we are following clearly and closely. I mean, because we're dealing with students that are also under 18, so that actually makes a lot of the stipulations stronger because they're minors. So we really have had to go through the process of making sure that safety is our number one priority the entire time.
And Jason, I imagine this is a particularly special period for maybe some of the teenagers who were planning to be part of the spring musical. A lot of us who grew up in theater know how important that weekend would be in high school. And so many musicals or plays for high schools were canceled because of this thing. And now these kids are getting to perform. So can you talk a little bit about, I guess, their enthusiasm for having this opportunity?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you think about it, proms and graduations and all of this stuff. And what was really interesting is when we did not have our first in-person rehearsal until June 1st. And, you know, through our entire rehearsal process, we were masking and all that. And it was amazing to see them get together because at first they didn't want to talk to each other. Like, they were so terrified of everything that they, it was like they forgot how to communicate. They forgot how to interact with other people, and now it's become a thing to where this has become their lifeblood. This has become their outlet, their thing, and because of that, they're taking it so seriously. You know, we've talked about, you know, be careful going out, be careful, like, you know, with what you're doing. It's not just about you; it's about all of these other individuals that want this thing to happen, so they have that moment because there was so much finality in the spring. Without us knowing that it was finality, this has become a thing that has really, there's a song that says seize the day, and they have really risen to that occasion and know that this moment is a special moment and that they really want to take advantage of it.
That's Jason Burgess, co-founder and artistic director of Commonwealth Artist Student Theater. We're also talking with Brian Isaac Phillips, producing artistic director at Cincinnati Shakespeare Company. And Brian, we just had Dylan Myers on from Ensemble Theater in the previous segment. And Ensemble has this newly expanded, beautiful theater. You have a wonderful new space in downtown Cincinnati as well. And these expansions of what started as smaller organizations is really a testament of the quality of theater offered in this city and also the response that it gets from a committed audience that's found here. And I'm wondering, as an arts administrator, what do you think happens on the other side of this? Do you think that will still be there?
Oh, absolutely. I think that people are starved for a live theatrical experience, for that sense of community, for that dialogue that happens between audience and actor. And, you know, look, I've been consuming as much online theater and digital theater as possible for the last 4 months, but it, for the most part, just makes me miss what we can do when we're together in the room and we have that experience. So I think that on the other side of this, you'll see so many of the patrons of all of our theaters in town just so excited to come back and have that experience again that they won't, you know, it's not something that they'll take for granted. I think that here in Cincinnati, we're very lucky that we have such a robust theater scene. We have a great art scene. We have a great music scene. We have a great restaurant scene. There's so much wonderful in Cincinnati. And the pandemic's a really great moment to remind us of what we have and what we don't want to lose. And I think on the flip side of this, you'll see all of our theaters and all of our restaurants and all of our businesses succeed again. And I think that we're succeeding now in the way that we can in isolation, in quarantine, because we do have the support from this community, because the community understands how essential we are to having a great city.
And Jason, you're working with the next generation of professional theater artists, and we've seen so many artists lose their jobs during this period. And I'm wondering if that's on their radar at all, if that has raised any concerns for the choices they might make, whether to study at the university level or to really pursue this in earnest.
You know, yeah, I've had some really interesting conversations, especially with the graduating seniors that are about to go off and into their, you know, field of study with their universities. And they've seen the, you know, the article saying that, you know, 50% of artists are thinking about maybe not going back to the arts field and getting something more stable. And I think the thing that's so interesting with what we do is, yes, like, you know, this is my job, this is Brian's job, this is Lynn's job, but it's also our passion. And I think that's where it gets really tricky is, you know, we live in a world now to where it's not just like, hey, get your 9 to 5. It gets something that you really can gravitate towards, that you can put your energy and effort into, come home at the end of the day and be proud of that. And I think that's where they still are. Like they, you know, they're high schoolers, they're 18 years old. They're looking at like, this is not good now, but look what could be. And so many of them today live in a world to where it's like they don't know what their path is going to be because we don't know what the path is. Everything is you know, going so quickly and evolving so quickly that there are all these jobs that we don't even know exist yet. So I think they have hope, and honestly, that gives me hope. And I second what Brian says. I think that when this is over, you're going to see so much new, beautiful theater. It's going to be, you know, somewhat of a renaissance of art.
Well, Newsies.
And Michael, actually,
yeah, please, Brian. Yeah, we've got 30
just
seconds.
Jump off of that really quick. Just let people know that we have a fantastic creative class here right now. We have the next generation. We have a generation now that is waiting to work. So if you want to, and if you want to make sure that we keep that robust creative class here in Cincinnati, think about looking into these local theater companies and supporting them through buying subscriptions for seasons that are yet to be announced or will be announced. But things you can do today will guarantee that we keep that creative class so that we are successful on the other side of this.
And Newsies opens at Cass in a parking lot near Coney Island next couple of weekends. And Jason, remind us, Brian, remind us really quickly the next time we'll be able to see an outdoor performance by the Shakespeare Company.
The very beginning of August, we're going to be bringing you A Midsummer Night's Dream, Macbeth, and Romeo and Juliet.
Awesome. Jason Burgess, Brian Isaac Phillips, thanks to both of you for sharing some time with us today.
Thank you, Michael.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. More details about today's show and all of our past shows at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.